The following podcast is a B&E Network exclusive. Welcome to B-Movies and E-Books. I'm Craig Wade.
And I'm Brian Allen Delaney.
And today is episode 55, Arcades and Cyberbullies.
The big 5-5.
Yeah.
Is that a milestone?
Yeah.
I guess it feels like it should be a milestone because it's two fives.
Yeah, because five was such a milestone for us.
Yeah, it was.
But, yeah.
I think that was the Sharknado 2 episode.
Was it? Oh, God. Dude, honestly, I really, really wish we had never covered Sharknado.
Yeah, but now we have to.
Yeah, now, no matter what, we have to cover every Sharknado that happens.
Yep.
But
yeah, such is our life.
Yeah, we really screwed ourselves. So on today's episode, we're going to be reviewing the film Hashtag Horror. And mm-hmm. The book Zero Lives Remaining by Adam Cesare, or Adam Caesar, depending on how you'd call it. Well, he calls it Caesar, but the correct pronunciation is Cesare.
Dude, if it's his name, he gets to pick the correct pronunciation of it.
Yeah, but if he gives the caveat that it's pronounced this way, but this is how he pronounces it, I don't know. I don't know what do there.
I don't know. I think you go with what he says.
I don't know. I don't know, man. This isn't a linguist show, so I don't know.
It could be.
But getting a weird buzz.
Yeah, we're fine.
Whatever. But yeah, so anyway, before we get into any of that, what do you got?
Like news-wise?
No, just anything.
Just in general?
Yeah.
I'm doing okay. I got a little bit of a stomach ache.
I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, dude, I started adding straws. That way you can't hear me take gulps anymore.
That's good. That's very courteous of you.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure you can still hear me on the straw. Yeah,
it's going to get to the end, and you're just going to make lots of slurping noises.
Yeah. But anyway, so what do you have?
TNT has officially greenlit I don't know if you'd call it reboot of Tales from the Crypt. Is it a reboot?
I would think, like, I would call it a reboot. I don't know, because it's an anthology show. But I would say it's a reboot, since the Crypt Keeper is not going to be, you know, John Cassier.
Yeah, they've officially greenlit it for 10 episodes.
Dude, so, I'm going to love it if every episode has like a twist ending.
It'd be great.
Yeah, we're going to get Shyamalan'd over and over. But
I just hope like the monsters are defeated by water every single time.
I do think that it really sucks that, like, if it was Tales from the Dark Side, that'd be fine. But they're going to have to water it down for TNT. And it just kind of sucks, but what are your feelings on that?
I'm going to give it a shot, at least.
Yeah. It's just everything on Tales from the Crypt was so hinged on, like, this mix of nudity and gore. Like, it really was. Like, that's what defined it versus all the other anthology shows. It was bad language, nudity, and gore, plus good stories. But
yeah.
It just kind of, like, what's going to make it distinguishable from, I don't know, Twilight Zone or any of those now? Or
isn't there some other horror anthologies on right now?
I'm aware of.
Well, there's, like, the sci-fi one. Like, Dark Matter, isn't that one kind of horror?
I'm not even familiar with that show. There's one on, like, a Canadian one called Darknet. But I don't know of anything in the States right now, as far as that goes. But I could be wrong. Totally wrong. Tweet us at BND Pod if I'm wrong.
or just in general, I guess.
But
no, I don't know. I'm excited. You know, like, I'm actually a fan of Shyamalan. Not like recent Shyamalan.
Dude, you're a super, like a Shyamalan super fan.
But I will say though, I like Sixth Sense was okay.
But you mean his only good film?
I do like Signs.
Signs was good.
I liked The Village.
I mean, The Village, the creature design was really cool.
Yeah. The Happening was okay.
Was it? Like, I feel like you're giving him like a giant pass. Like, I honestly think Signs was watchable. If it comes on, I'll watch it. I'm never going to go.
I love Signs.
Well, what I'm saying is that's his okay one. Sixth Sense was great, except for the fact there's no rewatchability.
Yeah.
And Unbreakable was awesome.
Oh, Unbreakable was great.
I also feel like Unbreakable kind of just like, you know, Unbreakable was like a film that it never really started, if that makes sense. It's all backstory. Like, Unbreakable 2 would have been really cool. But it's just literally all backstory to where it's like at the end of the film, spoilers for Unbreakable, but at the end of the film, it's like, you know, and you are my anti-person, like, and we'll see what happens. Like, well, it's just like, really?
I know they had planned a sequel.
Yeah.
And it never happened because Unbreakable didn't make a lot of money somehow.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I liked it. But I don't know. I do think I'm not really, I don't consider myself a big Shyamalan film or, you know, fan. But at the same time, like, what he does piques my interest. It just kind of sucks that they got the PG-13 guy to green light something that in the past has been super rated R and now is obviously going to be toned down. It's going to be watered down.
But we'll see.
Whatever. I guess it's better than not having one.
There you go. Or is it?
I don't know.
I don't know. Who knows? It could be great.
It could be. I hope it is. I mean, but coming off things like, what was that, almost 10 years ago now, Masters of Horror, I don't think that you can get much better in an anthology series than that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, okay, TNT, who's not really known for their original programming, is going to spearhead.
They had like Franklin and Bash.
Yeah, Rizzoli and Isles, right?
Man.
That and Franklin and Bash are like shows that I've never heard. Like, you see commercials. It's like fake commercials in movies. Yeah. Like, dude, tonight on.
Franklin and Bash wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
It was pretty good at times. I mean, it was
it
funny? Yeah.
Eh. All right.
Dylan McDermott was in it.
Was he?
Yeah.
Franklin and Bash?
Yeah.
Huh.
Wait, okay. Hold on. No, I'm thinking of the wrong guy.
It was Mark Paul Gosselaar.
No. Their boss was the guy from Clockwork Orange.
Oh, Malcolm McDowell?
Malcolm McDowell. I always get their names confused.
Yeah, speaking of which, I finally
Dylan McDermott's watched, a woman, isn't it, she?
I finally finished Clockwork Orange this weekend. I know, I have an unpopular opinion that film's overrated, but it was better than I ever had given a chance to.
Yeah, like, I like that one.
But I still don't see, like, I believe the writer, or like the author of the novel even, was like, that movie sucked. Like, you know,
well, didn't Stephen King have reservations about
every film?
Kubrick's
yeah, as far as I know, Stephen King hates The Shining, film version, but
I hear he likes the TV one with Terminator 2 in it with the T-1000.
He was in that,
I know, wasn't he?
No, dude, it was the guy from Sour Grapes.
yeah,
dude, oh, no, it was Dylan today. McDermott.
oh man, I am bad today.
Yeah, whatever.
Who cares?
Well, it's early. That's the other thing. So we told everyone this was going to start around 10. It's so for the live listeners, which There aren't really many, but we kind of screwed y'all this week. Like, it was supposed to start at 10, but we decided to start it early because we both have shit to do. So,
yeah.
Anyway, you get a very low impact, tired episode today.
These things happen. They can't all be winners. They can't all be the Sharknado episodes.
Oh yeah. Right. What else? What else we got? Franklin and Bash news.
No, in a little bit of irony, HBO is developing a Fahrenheit 451 film.
Why is that irony?
But just because, like, you know, it was a movie or it was a book about people, you know, losing interest in books. And so it's just funny to see, like, live action adaptations of that. You know what I mean?
Well, because I mean, honestly, I feel like it really was more about censorship than about people losing interest.
I'm just saying, on the surface, people, you know, got rid of books and what's helping, you know, destroy literature industry.
Yeah. You know, okay, so you remember the ending of Fahrenheit 451, right?
Of course.
Where everyone just basically becomes living books.
Yeah, there's giant fire salamanders.
Yeah, if you were a living book, which one would you hope that you were? Because I'd be really pissed if I was like Winnie the Pooh.
I'd want to be something short.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have the wherewithal to memorize an entire book.
I don't think you do.
I don't either. I don't know. Something good, I guess.
You know. Like okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, honestly, that was going nowhere. No. So it's all right.
No, I was just going to say something that never, like, didn't hit a lot of the horror radar that should have over the past week was the release of the film. What was it? Just Holidays?
Mm-hmm.
It came out on VOD, and it had, like, a ton of good directors on it. Like, Kevin Smith directed a segment, a bunch of, like, and it's an anthology film about different holidays of the year, and mm-hmm. it had, like, really good directors.
Are we finally getting my Arbor Day horror story?
We may. I don't know. I didn't see it. But that's something that I didn't even know was coming out this recent, and then all of a sudden I'm seeing just a few rumblings about, oh yeah, check out horror or check out Holidays. And like, literally, I caught Kevin Smith's Twitter page, like him promoting it via Twitter. Like, there has not been much about it. So either this movie totally sucks or they've really, really screwed up the marketing on this film.
I don't know.
Whatever.
Well, I mean, we could check it out.
You want to do it next week?
Sure.
Okay. That was easy.
That was easy. Real quick.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to say about Fahrenheit 451 real quick.
Yeah.
I hope they have the sweet jetpack scenes.
Oh, dude, the jetpack scenes were my favorite in the old movie of it.
Yeah. If anybody's ever seen the old movie of Fahrenheit 451, if you haven't, go watch it because the jetpack scenes are amazing.
Although, if I remember right, I think that film really, like, it screwed the pooch on the novel, right?
What do you mean?
Like, the film version of Fahrenheit 451 really wasn't that good, was it?
No, it was pretty terrible.
Okay, but it did have those sweet jetpacks?
Yeah, it was sweet jetpack scenes. And I guess, like, book burnings, if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, which I would hope that our audience really, I don't know, maybe we do have, like, this this giant following of burn book fans.
Why would we?
I don't know. You never really get, like, we can kind of get some insights as far as our audience goes, but you never really know what they're into, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so. I don't know. Maybe they're really listening for us to, like, rip apart books. Because they get some sort of jollies off of it.
Yeah. Who knows? But what were you going to say?
No, that was it. Sweet jetpack scenes.
That was it. Awesome.
Okay. One quick bit of news. Or, like, I got two other quick things because there's not much else information on them. Okay. Yeah. So we'll go, like, rapid fire. Channing Tatum is joining the sequel to The Kingsman, and also there's a sequel to The Kingsman.
Nice.
That was all one piece. Which, like, spoilers for The Kingsman for like a 2-year-old movie now. So Colin Firth gets shot in the face, right? And probably dies. But the poster for it is a set of glasses, like the ones he wore, with one of the lenses missing. And then the back says, "The reports of my demise have been greatly exaggerated."
Nice.
Yeah. So he's probably back.
Well, I didn't read the comic. Did you?
No, I did not.
Is he doing that same kind of thing with the comic that he did with Kick-Ass Part 1, the film? Where
it's basically a screenplay with...
Yeah, well, that, and he's releasing it while they're filming, like, so that the films, he'll tell, like, the screenwriters, which, like, you know, I think he got credit for screenwriting as well, but there was additional screenwriters. He told them what direction he was going on, but by the time that the comic came out, he kind of went a slightly different direction.
Well, Kick-Ass 1 was completely done before it was a movie, right?
No, that's the one I'm talking about. While they were filming and stuff.
I thought that happened with 2.
I don't believe... I could be wrong. I don't know. But I thought that it happened with 1. Because I was really interested in a lot of part 1 and was not interested in part 2. So that's what I'm thinking. So, okay. I don't know. But who knows? I mean, I know the comic was out before the film. Like, for a while. Like a year.
But yeah. But...
I don't know. Well, I would say if the comic of The Kingsman is out, then check that to see if he's alive. That's all I was getting at.
Well, he always does like short runs, like 6 episode or 6 issue things.
Yeah.
Miniseries. So the first Kingsman was out like a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if they ever made an actual sequel to it. Huh. Okay, and then my last thing, and then we're done, Bill and Ted 3.
I'm excited.
Me too.
I didn't know that I was excited until I saw the picture of Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter together.
Like, just together?
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, like
literally not doing anything.
No, just hanging out. Like, yeah. It makes you wonder, like, how they're going to do it. Like, I really, really hope that they're, like, grown-up dads. And
yeah.
And get pulled back into it.
I hear it's parallel dimensions is what they're going to explore this time.
Yeah, it will bum me out if they try to like just take this different route where they just try to make them look young, kind of like they did in Tron 2. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. That'll bum me out. Like, it just doesn't work. It always looks goofy.
Yeah.
I'm just talking Tron 2.
I know. Well, no, I mean, like, okay, do you remember the end of X-Men Origins Wolverine?
I tried to block those movies out, dude. The Wolverine ones.
Young Patrick Stewart showed up.
No. As funny as it sounds.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Now, did we ever really talk about the Green Room on this podcast?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like last week.
Okay. Well, I mean,
either that or it was the week before.
One I never can two. Remember what we say on here versus what we talk about anyway.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, cool. Well, you want to jump into reviews or we got more?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Unfortunately, I had nothing to add as far as news goes this week. So thanks. Thanks for, I mean, I guess I kind of said something about holidays, but whatever.
Yeah.
You know what,
Brian? Yeah, right in the middle of my Fahrenheit 451 news.
Brian, I'm going to go ahead and give you a clap on Blab for that.
Oh, God.
Dude, where'd your other 4 claps come from?
Yeah, I don't know. You? it said you did it.
Really?
Yeah. No. You just clap it in your sleep.
Yeah. I'm sleep clapping. Got the sleep clap. All right. Well, we will be back with our review of #horror.
Awesome. That I'm going to check great. That I mean, out later.
There's nothing about that I dislike.
Actually, I don't think she's listened to episode yet.
It's so good.
It's still scary, right?
It makes me uncomfortable.
Oh, scary as shit. New episodes every Tuesday. A B&D Network podcast. Scary as shit, or not that scary.
Okay, and we're back with our review of Hashtag Horror. All right, so here's the, I'm going to say, official synopsis off of IMDb.
Uh-huh.
Okay. A group of 12-year-old girls face a night of horror when the compulsive addiction of an online social media game turns a moment of cyberbullying into a night of insanity.
Okay. Is that what we saw in the film? I mean, it is kind of.
It's kind of what we saw, but that would be like, all right, how spoilery do you want to get with this?
Not really.
Okay, so it's kind of what we saw. It was a group of 12-year-old girls. There was a little bit of cyberbullying involved, and there was a game involved, but none of it really connected.
Yeah.
Like, they mentioned, or they never mentioned the game. It was like something they put in post.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this film was weird. Like, okay, so it kind of reminded me of, like, David Lynch trying to direct, like, Mean Girls. Because there were parts that were, like, weird for weirdness sake, right?
Uh-huh.
But then there were other parts that just felt like, I don't know, like... I can't even explain it. Okay. So there's like this trippy vibe that's never really explained, but kind of just alluded to that this house is at the, you know, some sort of point where the four winds connect and there was this previous murder in this house, but it never really says, like, it doesn't, that's a red herring kind of, or maybe it drives the people to murder. It never explains it.
The only thing that ever did anything to was there was this giant painting of a dude with an egg for a face, and occasionally it breathed.
And then the paintings around the house did that kind of, like, they would move their eyes and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, what did that have to do with anything else?
Nothing.
If it did, it was never explained. It was like, you know, a group of, what was it, 5 or 6 12-year-old girls being 12-year-old girls for an hour of the movie.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, yes, there was a little bit of cyberbullying, right? And the thing is, though, like, I don't know. And this game that it mentions was just used as, like, basically star wipes in between scenes.
Yeah, and it never really, like, I honestly think that if the app or the game or whatever the hell that they were posting to was that important, they should have given some sort of backstory to.
Or,
I honestly felt like they filmed it in the script, which is like, didn't mention it. And like, oh, you called me a bitch on whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then decided like, oh, this isn't really coming across. Let's put a lot of like Candy Crush type crap in it.
Now, see, they did the same thing for the opening credits, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely loved the opening credits because
it was
this weird, like, back and forth between super, like, Lisa Frank style, right? Like, bright colors, very girly, and then just, like, abject horror. Like, yeah. Just like back and forth really, really quick, like as the credits were going on. And I was like, oh my god, if this is the tone of this movie, I'm gonna love it.
I will say that there was a lot about this film that I really liked, but there's more that I didn't like.
Yeah.
Honestly, okay, yeah, we'll get into ratings later, but okay, so the actual tone of the film itself, if you take apart the fact that it felt like we were watching actual 12-year-old girls just sit and be assholes to each other, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you take that out, there was a lot as far as the tone and the ambience and the atmosphere. It felt a lot like the original Black Christmas to me because there's this unseen killer that it doesn't even, you don't even feel like you could... you have any access as to who it could be. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't feel like there was a legit red herring in this film. Did you?
Oh, no. You knew who the killer was going to be as soon as a motive happened.
Oh, really? See, I was the opposite. I didn't
really
feel, yeah, I was like, I don't know who it is, and I don't, but the bottom, like the bad side is I didn't really care.
Yeah.
They screwed up the film enough, like to the point that I did not care who or what happened. I just kind of wanted it to be over. But I'm just talking about, I'm talking about the actual atmosphere of the film itself, taken apart from the story. Like, so mm-hmm. I'm talking about the way it was shot, all of that. Like, that felt so much like Black Christmas, which at the end of the original Black Christmas, it never says who the killer is. And it just felt...
Spoilers.
It never had, like, a big reveal. It was just like, you saw what happened, and it's done. And so... God, I hope I'm right about that. It's been 10 years since I've watched the original Black Christmas. But, I don't know. I thought stylistically it was kind of cool. What I hated was the cut scenes, the fact that it never explained the app that was apparently so pivotal to the film.
The only time it ever even mentions it, like actually mentions it in the film, is the end. Mm-hmm. Like the very, very end.
Yeah. Now,
with like newscasters.
Yeah. Now, are we going to actually give a, are we going to mention some of the casting choices in this film?
Sure.
Okay. So Chloe Savigny or Savini, I don't know how to say her name really, but pretty highbrow actor to play kind of a bit part, right?
Yeah. I mean, and she was important, but she was in it for like 10 minutes, maybe.
Yeah. And the scene with her and the parent and the other, or her friend, right? Yeah. Was one of the more interesting scenes in the film. And that scene actually is what felt very Lynchy to me, David Lynch. Okay. Just how odd their dialogue was back and forth, and how there was so much unspoken coldness between them, you know, even though they're just like, it just felt like that was like the grown up version of this same group of girls, you know, where they're like, hi, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. But there's so much just coldness between them. So I thought that was kind of cool. It just kind of blew me like blew my socks off that she would be like, yeah, I'm going to do this bit part in this low budget horror film. Same thing goes with Timothy Hutton. Star of 30-something, I believe. I think he was in that. He's always a good actor. Like, I haven't seen him in a bad film.
Yeah, he's won an Oscar.
For what?
Ordinary People.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But, I mean, he's also super creepy. I don't know if you ever saw Stephen King's The Dark Half, the film version.
No.
He was the star of that, and he's a very effective actor, as is Chloe Savigny. They're both really competent actors, yet the camera was focused on this group of girls that... Eh.
Okay, so basically, up until a point, which is when Timothy Hutton comes in, the whole entire movie is basically you watching these girls at a slumber party. Now, it's not like... That sounds creepy. Let me rephrase. It's like them, you know, hanging out for like an hour of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's legit what I figured that a, I don't know, 12-year-old girl slumber party would be like. Just them sitting there and talking.
Yep. And so. then like they're like trying on jewelry and junk like that. Right. And then they do the least 12-year-old girl thing I think I've ever seen.
What?
Right. Is put all of their phones in a safe.
Yeah, but they do that because of the cyberbullying.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it's like...
They basically gang up on this one girl and just keep calling her fat over and over.
Yeah, but then it's like they kick the one girl who was really mean out, you know? Yeah. So it's just weird. But up until that point, whenever like Timothy Hutton comes around, right? Yeah. Which is honestly like 45 minutes into the movie, mm-hmm. right? I kind of feel like the whole movie was kind of boring.
No, I agree. I thought it was kind of interesting, pretty much the scenes that did not revolve around the girls, the young girls. I mean, and there was some of that that was interesting, but it was, I don't know if you ever saw Elephant. But
no, I did not. Oh, wait.
The I Gus think Van Zandt
I saw, yeah,
film.
I think I saw some of it. I think you made me watch some of it.
Did I? Well, okay, so Elephant just kind of follows these. It's about a school shooting, and it literally just follows kids around. Like, it feels like there's not really a script. This feels like the scripted version of that, mm-hmm. where they decided not to talk, like, where they decided to just talk about random crap. But you could tell that there were scenes where some of the actors or some of the actors involved were better than others, and mm-hmm. some were kind of trying to remember their lines, you know. But it's not like the lines ever really played into the plot. It was just like,
no. And in those like 40 minutes before anything actually starts happening, there's probably 4 or 5 montages.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then,
and more than one dance scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so really it was just a lot of time filler, and then they tried to sidetrack you by weirdness, like just weirdness for weirdness' sake.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like they had a lot to say about society as far as our attention to cell phones and stuff like that, and the fact that, you know, every attempt at social media drives people apart, but they didn't really fulfill any of that, and then they wedged this slasher in where I did not care about one person. So it was like, my God.
No, yeah, exactly. Like the chick that they kick out, right? Because mm-hmm. she's being even worse of a person, right?
Which, like, they're all terrible people, right?
Yeah, yeah, they're all assholes, right? But, you know, when they kick her out, you know, it's basically into the woods alone in the snow. And you're like, oh, man, that's sad. But then you're like, no, she's a terrible person and I'm not sad at all.
Well,
it's like, even though she's a 12-year-old little girl, I'm like, whatever. She deserved it.
She deserved the snow. Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know. It was just bad. And it's like, I didn't care about any of the characters at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so then whenever they all started dying horrible deaths, I really didn't care, like, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
So what would you give this?
Well, I have one more thing to say about the actual social media, because you were talking about how, you know, it seems almost like a commentary on how social media drives people apart.
Uh-huh.
Right. But it also kind of seems like a commentary on how social media drives people apart written by a person who has no idea how social media works.
Yeah. Written by someone that just plays Candy Crush.
Yeah, exactly.
Because literally they would like upload a photo and then it would show like this Candy Crush scene and be like, fatality. And you're like, what? Wait, wait, what?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It was just so weird.
I mean, I understand some of the, like, the aspect as far as, like, you know, you go out and you eat with your group of friends and people are just screwing around on their phones.
Yeah.
I understand that it does drive people apart. It also brings people together that who you never really would meet otherwise.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've never really had like any friends that I don't know in real life that I'm like just super, like, there's people that I'll talk to and that I consider like, you know, social media friends and stuff like that. But like, I haven't really had a friendship on the internet that I've been super, super invested with. Is that wrong?
No, I mean, guess not. I don't know.
But I don't know. Maybe this is the wrong platform to talk about that.
But yeah,
no.
It's like, yes, check us out at BNE Pod. We'll ignore you.
No, that's not what I mean. But like, okay, your friends you talk about, like, I don't know, maybe other friends talk about different things, but our group of friends, we literally talk about the minutiae of like, dude, I was stuck in line at CVS for 2 hours, blah, 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 you know, that kind of crap. If any of like my social media friends or Facebook friends or whatever,
you should just start tweeting that, like live tweeting CVS lines. Like from your personal page, not ours.
Well, but no, like, I don't know, like Facebook friends and stuff. If they talk about that, I'm not invested in that. Now, if we're into like the same kind of cool stuff, like we can talk about that and have a great online friendship. But like the thing is, I don't know. It does, it brings people together, but whenever you're hanging out with your friends and everyone's on their phone, and I'm guilty of this as well. Mm-hmm. And like,
yeah, showing me stupid memes.
Dude, I don't care. Those memes were the highlight of our lunch the other day. but yeah, I don't know. It seems like there's a lot to say about that, and this really isn't, like, they didn't do it right.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seemed like one of those, almost like one of those scare things, like heavy metal music is going to make you shoot schools and yeah. stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
So what do you give it?
Two out of five.
That's what I was going to do.
I feel like watching it, some of the visual choices were cool enough to watch. The film itself is weak. The story's very weak. It's something that we've seen a million times, and we've seen it in better formats, especially for the horror genre. In films like, I don't know, The Dirties was awesome, where it was maybe not cyberbully, but The Dirties was amazing, and it's just a bullied film that turns into a massacre. And films like Unfriended, that would be a cyber bully one that mm-hmm. was much better. And so, I don't know. We've seen this done better and less weird for weirdness sake. There's no real point in this film.
Harsh.
That said, I don't regret watching it. It was okay.
No, I mean, like you said, there was a lot of neat looking stuff.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah. So, hashtag horror, hashtag no.
God.
There's a million like wittier things to say than that.
Like almost anything would have been wittier than that.
Oh my God. So,
okay. Yeah, but you can check it out for free on Netflix, whatever.
I mean, assuming you already pay for Netflix.
Well, you can check it out for like 16 cents then if you're going to prorate back into the films and crap that you watch.
All right. So you want to come back with Zero Lives Remaining?
I do.
Man, okay, yeah. So we live in like the ghetto. It's like rough. They're just gangsters and shit. We have to keep all the windows closed.
Podcast makes us no money. We can't move.
Like there's like a shootout going on regularly.
Why do you say shit like that? Why does he say shit like we live in the ghetto and there's shootouts regularly? Just for the clarity of the podcast, there's not.
Two versus three, nerds with beers and opinions.
A weekly podcast hosted by Cody, Kyle, and Greg.
New episodes every Thursday at bmoviesandebooks.com.
All right, we are back with Zero Lives Remaining by Adam Caesar. And the synopsis of this says, Robbie Asaro is dead and alive. He's a ghost in the machine, keeping a watchful eye on the arcade where he lost his life 2 decades ago. And the afterlife is good. The best thing ever to have happened to him. These are all different sentences. That's why I'm pausing.
Do you have to explain reading to people?
Kind of. I have to explain my reading. I'm not a good... I'm not a good out loud reader. What is the word for that? It's escaping me.
Like orator?
Oh, well, douchey word for that? All right. So the afterlife is good. The best thing ever to have happened to him. But when the conscious electric current, formerly known as Robbie Asaro, makes a decision to protect one of his favorite patrons, Tiffany Park, from a bully, he sets loose a series of violent supernatural events that can't be stopped. Trapped inside the arcade as the kill count rises, Tiffany and a group of gamers must band together to escape from what used to be their favorite place on Earth and the ghost of Robbie Asaro. That is a very, very on-the-nose summary.
Yeah, and honestly, you know what? I didn't read that before I read the book.
Neither did I. I'm just okay. laughing at like, oh yeah, we're going to review this thing front to back. Oh yeah, I didn't read that part.
Well, that kind of gave away the twist.
The like, twist.
To me, it was a twist that Robbie Asaro was going to end up being the bad guy.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe it could have been a twist had they not gone that chapter inside of, crap, I'm blanking on his name, Chris Murphy.
Uh-huh.
Had they not done that chapter inside of his head to kind of humanize him for a bit, not saying he was a good guy, because he wasn't, but I think that had they not done that, I don't know. it would have been less, or, you know, I would have thought Chris Murphy would be the sole driving force, which he was in a sense, but I don't know. So none of that makes sense to anyone. So, okay. I will say that this book is very well written.
Uh-huh.
At no point was there a style choice that took me out of the story at all. It was highly, highly played toward the nostalgic audience.
Uh-huh.
It hit everything that I'm looking for in a book for this podcast.
Yeah, references to nu metal.
Dude, it literally hit every single thing that I mean, yeah, there's more tropes out there that we're interested in, but like, this is what I hope to read like every week, this kind of book.
Yeah. Go on.
It literally, like, I'm trying not to get too in depth as far as
I noticed.
Like, spoilering. yeah. But it also shortens this section up quite a bit. But it literally, there's a genre change. So it starts off as kind of a ghost story. There's a genre shift. Well, I guess 40% of the book isn't even ghost story, really.
No,
it's kind of just patrons at an arcade.
Yeah, it's almost just like a 80s movie.
Yeah.
Even though it's set, you know, not in the 80s, right? It's set like in 2009 or something like that, right? But it still felt like the 2014. It still felt like the 80s, like, for the whole entire time. And it's because most of it takes place in like the vintage section of an arcade, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. So it still just kind of felt like this sort of, I don't know, like, it wasn't really horror, like, at the, like, for first half of it, right? It was just like people hanging out in an arcade and there just happens to be a ghost.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. It's like this guy passed away in chapter one. Like,
dude, right off the bat, chapter one was amazing. Like,
yes.
I don't know why. There was something about like just the like the pride you could see in the like in the description of how the guy makes the pizza. Right. It was just like, I don't know. It was just, it had me hooked. And all the first chapter is basically a dude making a pizza.
Yeah.
Right. But,
I don't know. I mean, it was so, so good on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing negative to say about it. Do you?
No.
Like, normally we have pros and cons and stuff like that. I have nothing negative, period, to say.
Yeah. like, because I feel like, okay, there were some characters in it that were, I don't know, I guess for a horror movie, they're kind of just like fodder characters.
Yeah.
You know, where they don't really have anything important, right? They're just there to up the kill count. Yeah. Right? Like, for instance, I'm just going to spoil a little bit. When the paramedics arrive and you're like, okay, this is a, you know, Return of the Living Dead.
That's exactly what I thought.
Style thing where the paramedics come and they're just literally there to get killed. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. But then it kind of goes back and gives you backstory on them all, like on both of the paramedics that it kills, and just like humanizes these two just random deaths.
Yeah, know? But it doesn't like go super far back.
No, like, it's like a paragraph a piece.
Yeah. But, yeah. But it's and still, that's one thing that I loved about this. Like he would go back to give backstory on chapters, but the chapters would be like 3 pages. like not every chapter, but if it was just like some bullshit chapter to give backstory, you know what I'm saying? Like well, he kept the word count down.
And it would like go back, you know, and show the same chapter or parts of the same chapter from a different perspective.
Yeah.
So it was almost like the chapters weren't linear. It was like you had different perspectives going on at the same time that overlapped.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, chapter one would be this event happened. And then chapter two would be like, well, here's part of the first event again, but here's some of the next one, you know? And it was just from the ghost's perspective or whatever, from Robbie's perspective. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting because then you get some things that happen that you're like, at first, you're like, why would Robbie do that? You know, like whenever shit's really starts going down, right? You're like, why would he do that? And then the next chapter fills it in and you're like, oh, well, this is the motivation for that.
Yeah.
You know, there's one part in particular that I'm talking about, but I don't want to say it.
That's fine. I think that it actually applies at multiple points because thinking of one where it does not. I guarantee we're not talking about the same thing, and it definitely applies.
But that being said, like, you know, even the non-main characters, you know, so like, I guess Kate, the girl who works behind the counter at the concessions thing, there's these little, like, usually short descriptors, you know, that one of the other characters will think, like, whenever Chris is thinking about her, like whenever you first get introduced to her and it's like one little short sentence and you're like, okay, I know who that person is, you know? The same thing happened whenever like Chris himself was first introduced. Right. Like it's the sentence that you like introduce him with. It's like Chris Murphy liked his metal new and his stereotypes broad. And I'm like, I know who that guy is. Exactly. Like right off the bat.
Exactly.
And it's just like, I don't know. I think this might be my favorite book we've read.
It definitely, I don't know if it is my favorite, but it might, it's definitely probably, spoiler alert, going to get the highest rating that I have ever given. Only because there's a section of horror films like that I absolutely love, and I thought that we would cover more when we started this podcast, like goofy, like creature feature type stuff, but they can't be shit like just too goofy, you know? So like a perfect example would be the 80s remake of The Blob. To me, that is a perfect film for this podcast, and that for me, you know, like I like scary. I love scary and cheesy. And this film or this book doesn't go super cheesy, but it definitely hits a lot of the tropes that cheesy does.
Yeah.
You know, because there's at no point in this book does it lose any sort of, oh shit, you know, it doesn't lose the tension.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It absolutely was the strongest recommendation I can give to fans of 80s horror. People that like cheesier films versus mean-spirited. And not that this isn't mean-spirited at times. It definitely is. It gets dark as shit in a few places, but it's so good. So good. What do you have to say before we wrap any of this up?
We're wrapping up already?
No. But I've given all that I really want to add.
I don't know. Like I've just said, like the characters were great. The setting was great. You know, I mean, like
it was a bottle episode, and I know it was a bottle episode. check one off.
Well, hold on. Does it count though? Because there were technically different set pieces. There was the upstairs. There was the downstairs. There was like the eating area. There was the outside. But
it was all in the same thing. It was if one Dawn building. Of the Dead is considered a bottle episode, well, which you have said.
Well, then okay. By that definition, then. Like most sitcoms and stuff like that are bottle episodes because it all takes place in one house.
Dude, everything's a bottle episode because it all takes place in the world.
In the universe.
Yeah, bro. Gravity, my favorite bottle episode.
What?
Star Wars, another great bottle episode.
I don't know. Like, I just think that all the characters were well-defined, even if they didn't get like a lot of screen time each. Mm-hmm. You know, they were unique people. Everything was entertaining. The setting was great. You know, it wasn't. It gave you so much information with not a lot of words. Like, it was very concise. Everything was needed.
I think this is only like 120 page.
Yeah,
like it's a novella, like a long novella. Or a short novel, like somewhere in there.
But I mean, everything was. It felt like this book had the shit edited out of it. You know what I mean? Like he went through and he edited, and then he edited again, and then he edited again, like to get it down to exactly what it needed to be.
Well, yeah, and also they say that. And did you read afterward where he said that this, you know, was a first, a limited edition hardcover? And so this is a different version, like a different edit from that even. So maybe it has been trimmed down a little.
I don't know. I mean, it's just like everything felt necessary.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Nothing in the whole book really felt bloated at all. Like you said, the pacing was tight.
Yeah.
Very tight. In fact, almost to the point that, so I read this in two sittings. The pacing was tight enough that I had to backtrack a few pages just to like get right on board because it's like, I don't know. I fell asleep last night and woke up and was like, all right. No, so this is where we're at, you know, the pacing is very, very tight. I don't know. I mean, the thing that I actually liked a lot was the fact that the narrator never felt forced into the story, you know, to give an actual description. You know how Tarantino's big thing is he forces his style on everything. And I love that when it works. But sometimes that's the thing in books that don't work, where the author gets carried away in the universe. And it, you know, that's where the thing, you know, writing is masturbation comes from, because basically authors have a tendency to get carried away and please themselves by elaborating on something that doesn't need to be done. So I don't know. He never really felt, Adam Caesar never really felt like he was pushing into the story as much as he understood every aspect about the story and put it all down 100%. So I don't know. I'm going to say, very controversial, our first at B in the episode 55, our first 5-star book on my hand.
What?
5 stars. I'm not saying that it's a perfect book for everyone, but for me, and that's the only thing that I can judge by, for me, this is a perfect book.
Yeah. No, I agree. This is my first book to get a 5.
You got it? Oh, dude.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Because I was thinking like, what if Brian hates this? Because when I was done, which I didn't have much to go. I did not read this all last night and today. I actually read it earlier this week. And
me too.
Started like I had 20 pages left and I read like a few pages last night and fell asleep and then picked up and read like the last 20 pages today. But perfect book. And I was like, what if Brian hates it? And I'm giving a 5 and he's giving a 3. So, yeah.
No, I loved this book.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, if you like, you know, sort of a retro feel, you know, to your horror, and it's like the horror aspect of it really doesn't even kick in until halfway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I don't know, the rest of it's like character build and setting and everything like that. And then, yeah, it's great. I don't know. Like, if you like any sort of thing like that, if you like, you know, the 80s thing, you like ghost stories, you like arcades, then yeah, this is a great book.
Yeah, it's very, very cinematic. Now, if you like just fine literature, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast, but like if you like just the classics and shit, it probably will not be for you. But if you're on board for retro fun horror, this is it. This is it. So yeah, anyway,
that's great.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, our first 5-star book on episode 55.
Yeah, so high praise.
It's almost like we planned it.
Oh, I didn't think about that. The 5-5-5.
Just also like the fact that we still picked 2 things again that had to do with some sort of underlying theme together, because there was both like bullying.
And gaming.
Yeah. Look at this one. 2 connections on this one.
Now, do we have what we're going to watch next week?
Nope.
Yeah. So
you said something about holidays.
Yeah, let's do holidays, but I don't know what book we should have wrapped up. But I don't know. At episode 55, are we going to just all of a sudden get a lot more professional or not?
halfway. When we get to 100, we'll be professional.
I will say that I don't know if Robin Maloney is listening right now. However, I do want to extend him a huge thanks on hooking up a possible interview that would not have gotten on my radar at all. And he played a pivotal hand at getting the guy's attention.
Yeah.
So thanks a lot, Robin. That's freaking awesome.
And yeah, especially if it happens.
Yeah, but if not, I mean, either way, he got
the dude's attention. Went to the bat for us.
Yeah, so that's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, and so with that, I guess we'll see y'all next week. Follow us on or at BNEpod on Twitter
and Facebook.
And yeah,
same thing.
Oh, it's at BNEpod. I always forget that. So it's kind of like that everywhere on Blab.
Yeah, you can go to bnepod.com and go to the website if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and make sure and check out Longbox Small Talk for all your comic book and pop culture talk.
2 vs. 3, if you want to hear some Canadians get drunk and talk about pop culture.
Dude, I absolutely like that. Like, I love that show. It's fun. Like, I don't know. That show more than any feels like, and what's funny is we're friends with Rodney and Bill, but like in real life, but that show really feels more like anything we've ever been involved with, that it's just dropping in on friends talking.
Yeah.
You know, like it's pretty cool. Scary as Shit. Check them out for horror discussion and interviews with some people that may or may not be involved with horror in any aspect, but they're definitely going to quiz them about it. And so I don't know. It's pretty cool. So yeah, subscribe to the BNE Master Feed to catch all these shows and possibly more coming up very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly Adventures of Toxic City.
Hoping.
Yeah. Supposedly there's a few episodes in the can, but we've been hearing that for 3 months now.
Yeah. So. He needs to edit.
Yeah. And if you're in the area, you can catch our band, the Remote Junkies.
Oh god.
The Remote Junkies playing at Toxic City Comics in Texas City on, what is that, May 21st?
May 21st
sometime. There are rumblings that a certain wrestler will be there signing autographs. I never would have thought I'd have to follow a wrestler.
No, who says we're opening for him?
Well, I think that we're the last thing of the night due to scheduling reasons, not for any sort of cool thing.
Is it because the scrapbooking place next door has to be closed?
Possibly, dude. Yeah, the last time we played, we never talked about it on here, but yeah, the scrapbooking place next door, we ruffled their feathers.
They were going to call the cops on us.
I know. Bunch of old mean women.
It's like, you're supposed to be closed. Why are you scrapbooking at like 10 o'clock at night?
Well, first off, it was like 8. And second off, did you go in there? I was going to... Yeah,
I've been in there.
Yeah, they were like the nicest women ever. I really felt bad that we were just ruining their scrapbooking time, but, you know, whatever. It's what happens when you get us to play.
It's just, so punk rock.
Yeah, we're so punk rock that we had to traipse from the comic book store into the scrapbooking place.
I went there on a different day, actually, to go to the scrapbooking place.
Why? Right, well, that's different. Well, I mean, you can tell. So
my wife was looking for a specific like paper.
Okay, that makes sense. But all right, well, I think we hit a lull. So with that, we will see y'all next week.
The podcast you just heard is part of the B&E Network, brought to you by bmoviesandebooks.com.